Thank you, everybody, for coming. We have the Ezra Hashem, a nice answer that tomorrow is the bris for baby boy pleasure. But it's around 9 o'clock here. Not the evening, but the bris will be at 9 o'clock for Ezra Hashem here. That's about it. We have a very big simcha. We've run Bookspend, who supplies me with schreira to say over, always from one time we speak till the next time. So I very much appreciate it. Shkreira Bookspend.
Okay. I don't know. All right. If we investigate a little bit something about the B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, and Chetzi Shevet Menashe, and why they were not allowed, why they settled outside of Eretz Yisrael, we can learn a tremendous lesson of how far you have to go to have covered Habrius, and also we could learn the nth degree of Midas Hadin. Couple kashas. At the end here, we're holding weeks before Moshe Rabbeinu's patira. Its pasuk says, "Umikne Rav Hoyel of Negadav Levi Reuven," and they go to Moshe and they say, "We want to stay over here in Eveli Yarden. We want to stay here. It's very good for us." So why now? Vusepus Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven had more animals than everyone else, and it doesn't seem to be something that they had throughout the entire 40 years in the Midbar. So Vusepus, why are they the two Shvatim that have more animals? So a simple pshat is, the Archaim says that the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were fierce warriors. They were able to take their hand with a sword and chop off the head and the sword arm of their enemy. They can knock off the head and the arm in one blow, and they had just fought Sihon, Og, Midian, therefore, and they divided the spoils. So even though the spoils were divided seemingly equally, if you'll read the psukim, they were machalikit, but they were machalikit based on your kill rate. And the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven had a greater kill rate than anyone else, therefore they had more animals than anyone else, as the Archaim, and therefore now, at the end of the 40 years in the Midbar, we want to stay over here. All right, so that's it. That's one mahalach to explain why Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven had more animals. What about Shevet Menashe? How are they getting in the mix over here? Why did Moshe apportion half of Menashe to stay outside of Eretz Yisrael? The Netziv in his Sefer HaMakdover, he says that, first of all, Menashe with Ephraim, they were born in Mitzrayim. They are used to living, so to speak, in Golos. And if you'll have, so they can handle living in Chutz La'aretz, and by having half of them in Chutz La'aretz, you're going to create traffic. The Mishpacha in Eretz Yisrael is going to, let's go to holiday, let's go to those lands over there, so they'll be visiting here, we'll be visiting over there. There'll be interaction between the people. So Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven won't be left alone on their own outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's a way to go ahead and ensure their stability as being the frum erech ha-shvatim that they are. But there's another mahalach. There's a mahalach that Reb Chaim Vital writes b'shem the Arizal. And this mahalach posits that Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, from the get-go, they and Chetzi Shevet Menashe, they were never going to go into Eretz Yisrael. They never had a chance of going into Eretz Yisrael. Why? Bnei Reuven. Reuven was born, how to say it, the Lashon is with a pagam. There was a defect in the Leda of Reuven. Yaakov marries, seemingly he marries Leah, he marries Rachel. That night, Lavan inserted Leah instead, and it's only Vayar Beboker Vihinehi Leah. So the Arizal says, the Lashon, that there was a lack of das on Yaakov's part. The machshava wasn't there. So there was, that created some defect. I don't know what better word to use, and I'll be not patting myself on the back, but I'll tell you, I have Mirtz Hashem, a book that's coming out in a couple months, and this piece, some of what I'm going to say tonight, was not allowed. The editor or the person we went to, this came cannot be in the book for public consumption because it could be misunderstood. But the Arizal, he writes that the Arizal says there was a pagam in Reuven, and Eretz Yisrael is a land that can only tolerate absolute kedusha or MS, and therefore there was a chasar. Reuven can't go into Eretz Yisrael. Says the Arizal, the same thing existed with God. How? Leah had children with Yaakov. Rachel had no children. Rachel finally says to Yaakov, take my shivchas Bilha, ulai bana mamena. So Rachel discussed with Yaakov taking the shivcha, taking Bilha. Okay. Then you have several psukim later, Leah saw she had no more children. It says that Leah gave Zilpah her shivcha to Yaakov. There's no discussion between, we don't find in the Torah any narration of Leah talking to Yaakov and saying, take her. By Rachel spoke to Yaakov and said, take her. By Leah, it doesn't say Yaakov was spoken to about taking Zilpah. Says the Arizal, he never was informed. Leah did it without. Leah inserted Zilpah that night the same way that Lavan inserted Leah that night, and from that night came God. So God and Reuven were both born with the chasarin of machshava, with the chasarin of emes. However it's to be understood, they can't live in Eretz Yisrael. A similar defect existed by Menashe, by Chetzi Shevet Menashe. Who's Menashe? Yosef has two sons, Ephraim and Menashe. The sons come from Yosef and Osnas. Osnas is the product of the union of Shechem from Canaan, a Canaani, with Dinah. There was, whatever Dina's machshavas were, Shechem's machshavas were wrong. Therefore, the child that comes out, Osnas, has, again, their words, it's like 50-50. There's a half of her has the pagam mitzad her father. When she marries Yosef, that pagam is diluted into, it's not a half anymore, it's a quarter. Therefore, a quarter of the children of Osnas and Yosef, they have Ephraim and Menashe. A half of Menashe, one quarter of that union, cannot be allowed into Eretz Yisrael. And that's why Menashe, says, where Chaim Vital is writing, also never had a chance to be in Eretz Yisrael. So there was a pagam in the genetic... Yeah?
They had brothers, didn't they?
You mean Yosef had more children, you mean?
Yes, and they inherited under those two.
What can I say? I understand what you're asking. I don't know if it's a good kasha. I don't know how to answer it. I mean, I brought the lashonis here. If you want, I'll show it to you. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. That's okay. You know, it deserves a discussion. I hear what you're saying. Right? So again, there is all saying there's a chasar in the yichus of God, Reuven, and Chetzi Shevet Menashe. But what about our parsha? Our parsha says Umiknerav Hayolivnei God Olivnei Reuven. They're the ones who came forward and said, "Hey, we want to stay here." So was it a game? I mean, or were they never going to go into Eretz Yisrael, or was it because of Miknerav Hayolahem? So maybe what you see from here is the Kavod Habrius that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had. They never were going to go into Eretz Yisrael. But just imagine their feeling if they would have been told from the get-go, or if they would have been told at the end, oh, you know, after our 40 years here, you're staying here. Would have devastated them. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated things that it just so happens right before they go in, Umiknerav Hayolahem, they fought these wars, they captured animals, and they had faced more animals than anyone else, whether it's like the Rechaim or not. And this way, the reason to stay in Chutz Laaretz is not motivated by their psul, it's because it's generated by themselves. We'd rather stay over here to protect their kavod, not to make them feel less than the other shvatim. Could be that's one thing you can take from here. This this inyan of kavod habrius, the fact that you have to act compassionately with someone and be thoughtful of the other person, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu seemingly was over here, you see this from something else in Parshas in Maaseh. In Maaseh, we have the din of Ari Miklat. We have the Parsha that there are going to be Ari Miklat. We have more of it in. We have it more discussed in Voschanan. Three are in Miklat, are in Chutz Laaretz. Three are in Eretz. Three will be in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi tells us that the three that are in Chutz Laaretz are not effective, are not activated till you set up the three in Eretz Yisrael. And the pasuk says the one who kills Bishoygig, he stays there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Right. So he's there. Maybe a long time, maybe a short time, maybe the Kohen Gadol's already very old, he'll get out soon. Okay. The Meshech Chochmah has the following kasha. If the Golos, if the Ari Miklat and Chutz Laaretz are not Kohelet, do not have any effect till they conquer Eretz Yisrael and everything set up there, that was a 14-year period. There were 14 years of the Kivush of Eretz Yisrael. So what that means is that for 14 years of the conquest, anyone who killed Bishoygig doesn't have to go to Ari Miklat. So why is that? Why is there a loophole in this, seemingly a loophole, that will enable the one who killed Bishoygig? And again, it's not an accident, because that's the difference the Gemara makes between whether the death was Bederech Aliyah or Bederech Yerida. It's only if there's an element of negligence. You should have been looking down there anyway to see whether someone's walking by before you start lowering the basket or the bucket. So there's an element of responsibility. So why does that person get off for these 14 years? I mean, whether it's the last year of the Kivush, he doesn't have to go in, or if he killed Bishoygig in the beginning. Why would the system be such that a person can't go to Golos during those 14 years of the Kivush? I didn't say it right. Right. During those 14 years of the Kivush. Says the Meshech Chochmah. I didn't say the kasha right. The reason why, right, the pasuk says, the reason why he couldn't go to Golos is because who was the Kohen Gadol at that time? Pasuk says in Pinchas that Hashem tells Moshe that Yehoshua and Elazar will be the two that are being mechalek Eretz Yisrael. The apportionment of Eretz Yisrael is going to be with Yeshua and Elazar. That means Yeshua and Elazar are going to be alive till the land is conquered and dispersed and apportioned. That means if a person would go to Golos, go to one of the cities of Miklat in Chutz Laaretz during those 14 years, is there a chance of him getting out tomorrow, next week, or next year? There's no chance of him getting out, because he only gets out upon the death of the Kohen Gadol. But if Elazar, the Kohen Gadol, is the one who's going to be there with them till the land is divvied up, it means he's not going to die, says the Ar Sameach. A person cannot be put into Golos. It's one thing a person is put into Golos till the death of the Kohen Gadol. Even if the Kohen Gadol is young, you know, people die young. There's always a chance of drawing a get out of jail card. But if you go to Golos and you know from the get-go that I'm stuck here for 14 years or maybe 14 days, says the Ar Sameach, that's not tenable. You cannot do that to a person, and therefore no sentence of Golos was administered till the cities were set up in Eretz Yisrael, which means at that point Elazar could die, the Kohen Gadol can die. But you can't put a person in Golos where there's no chance of him getting out on any given day. Again, another example in these two parshas where you see the need for kavod habrius. You see that you have to be concerned about a person's feelings to the point that, all right, he let him be free rather than sentencing him to something that's just not acceptable. That's too much. I mean, just how far that goes, by the way, of the need for hope, the need to always think, to always know you can get out. There's a chance, there's a hope. I saw beautifully a zug from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. a nephew of his wife, Rabbi Yechiel Michel Stern, he has a sefer, and he says, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman as follows: if the Chachamim would ask us to make a nusach of a bracha against the Malshinim, if they would task us with writing something against the Malshinim, the snitches, what's a good word for Malshinim? Informers, we would go to town. We would say, their teeth should fall out, their tongue should rot, they should burn in Gehenna forever. Terrible things. What did the Chachamim b'Chachmasam do? Three words. V'la malshinim, al tihi sikva. May they have no hope. The rest of the bracha is not about the machinim, it's about other evildoers. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, hope is such a necessary ingredient to survive, to get by. If a person is bereft of hope, if you curse a person, if someone is told, may you have no hope, that's the klala gedoyla hagedoyla biyos, that's the biggest curse there can be, and therefore nothing more needs to be said. Again, fits in somewhat with this pshat from the Meshech Chochmah, that if a person knows, I'll never get out of here, I might not get out tomorrow, we cannot put him in to begin with. All right, so we saw a little bit from this pshat from the Arizal about the need for Kavod HaBriyos, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, even though Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, and Menashe were never going to go into Eretz Yisrael to begin with, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a circumstance where they're the ones who say, hey, we don't want to go in, to protect their covet. But there's another thing we can learn from part of the Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, or at least Chetzi Shevet Menashe, that did not go into Eretz Yisrael. There's another lesson. The Medrash, Medrash Rabbah in Parshas, Miketz. Medrash Rabbah brings the following. Yosef had Binyamin framed. They put the cup in Binyamin's sack. They chased the Shvatim down. Menashe was the one who was there. He was the one who did this, who was leading the troop after them. They find it by Binyamin. Pasuk says, it says, Vayikru sam loisam. The Shvatim, they tore their clothing. They were tzebrochen. They were despondent. Says the Medrash, since Menashe was goyrim the Shvatim to tear their begadim, their nachala, their inheritance, was torn up as well. Half in Eretz Yisrael, half in Chutz Laretz. Why ever that's the Mida Keneged Mida, it might indicate something interesting. Was Menashe doing the right thing? He was listening to his father. This was all part of a master plan that Yosef had to get them to acknowledge their, you know, what they did wrong in selling Yosef. He was creating a circumstance where now the Shvatim have to say, please, you can't do it, you know, you have to let Binyamin go, because what about our poor father? And then Yosef, as the way the Beis Halevi explains it, oh, what about me? Ani Yosef, is my father alive after what you did to me? But this was all part of Yosef's plan to get them to acknowledge their what they did wrong, what wasn't right, to do something about it. Menashe is being punished for it. So could be what you see from here is, and I'll bring you a couple other examples of this where it's very strong, you could be doing the right thing. He's listening to his father, this was something that needed to be done, but if you cause harm to someone else, there has to be an accounting. There has to be a cheshbon. Another example, an unbelievable example, Reb Tzadik in his Sefer Tzidkas HaTzadik, it's Simon, it's Os, Kuf Ayin Hey. He writes that a person is nenash, a person is punished, not for the sin, but for the tsar that they cause. And he writes, a person could be doing a mitzvah, a person could be doing the right thing, but if it, in the performance of a good deed, it causes pain to someone else, there has to be an accounting. And he gives a couple examples. He's Adoniram was appointed by Shlomo HaMelech to procure the stones for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and he put a tax on the people. Years later, he met his end. The people stoned him. He was doing a mitzvah. Building the Beis HaMikdash is a tzivoy, is a mitzvah on all Klal Yisrael. He was listening to Shlomo HaMelech. But if it hurts people in the pocket, There has to be an accounting, again, a cheshbon. And as I started off in the beginning, this is something that, you know, what are we supposed to do with it? This is something like that first shot from the Arizal that the editor of this book that's coming out will not allow in because it could be misunderstood. Are we saying that, you know, I could do a mitzvah and I'm going to get punished for doing a mitzvah, so why should I bother doing the mitzvah? How are you supposed to deal with it? I'm not sure. But listen to one last example of it. It's unbelievable, Zoyer. Zoyer says, Zoyer in Vayeshev, Yaakov stole the brachas. Yaakov took the brachas from his father. And he tricked his father with two methods. He tricked him, number one, with the begadim. He put on the clothing of Esav. And he also tricked him with the type of food he brought in. Yitzchak told Esav to go hunt. He was going to go ahead and get something wild game. He was going to get deer, tzvi. Rivka tells Yaakov, go get for me gedi izim. Why gedi izim? Why not a cow? Why not something else? Says Rashi, because the taste of gedi izim is similar to the taste of tzvi. And it had to pass the taste test. You had to bring in, if you bring in beef, it wouldn't have worked. You had to bring in whatever gedi izim is. You had to bring in the right. So he tricked his father with two things, the begadim and the tam shel zeh, says Rashi, is doima le tam shel zeh. Years later, continues the Zohar, years later, when the Shvatim sold Yosef, and the outcome was of stealing the brachas, v'yechrad Yitzchak charada gedoyla. Yitzchak was deshrokin. It was terrible, at least for a while. Years later, when the Shvatim sold Yosef, they tricked their father also. They tricked Yaakov. How did they trick him? They tricked him with the begadim, the clothing of Yosef. They took the ksonis pasim and dipped it into blood. And what blood did they dip it into? The Torah speaks out and says that they dipped it into the blood of Seir Izim. Why Seir Izim, says Rashi? Because the color of Seir Izim blood is similar to the blood of a human being. So that's the Zohar. This of the parallels is clear. He tricked him with the taste of, with the begotten, and the taste of this is like the taste of that. He was tricked in turn with the begotten, and the color of this is like the color of that. But Shtelzach, was Yaakov doing the right thing when he took the brachas? Number one, he was listening to his father. He was listening to his mother. It says in Chazal that Rivka had a greater level of nevuah, of nevius than Yitzchak. In Shemayim, they were helping Yaakov do this. The Medrash says, the Targum Yonasan writes, that Esav would snare, he would set a trap for an animal, the trap would be caught, the animal would be caught, and a malach would come and undo the snare, allowing the animal to get away before Esav can get the animal, all to give Yaakov enough time to steal the brachas, or to take the brachas. Maybe stealing is the wrong word. And it's exactly as Yaakov's walking out from one side of the room, Esav is coming in from the other side. So in Shemayim, they helped orchestrate Yaakov to take the brachas. So why is he being punished for this? Again, maybe with what Rav Tzadok says, that even if you're doing the right thing, but if there's tsar caused to someone else, there has to be an accounting. There has to be a cheshbon for it. Okay.
Do we say, is the punishment for the deed, or is it that when they do get punishment for whatever other reason is short of punishment, it's going to look like the tsar that they've caused to others?
I don't know. Again, I'll give you the shyness. I mean, I would have said that that's not the way it seems to read. I mean, but I hear what you'll gain by saying that. I understand that. All right, I saw a couple weeks ago, I guess it would be Beryl Simsa spoke about the avoida of the 3 weeks. I'd like to say something about, one last thing about where you see the covered habrias coming in. Not from Matos, not from Masei, but from Pinchas. From last week's parsha, you see covered how you have to be thoughtful of the other person. In Masei, in Pinchas, we have the carbon, the sar of Rosh Chodesh. And the Torah calls that sar, that carbon is a kapara. says the Gemara. The Gemara goes through a whole dialogue. It's a Gemara in Shavuos, it's a Gemara in Er, it's a Gemara in Chulin. That, you know, the Levana had spoken out of turn and said, you know, Ein shtei malacha mishtamshim bekeser echad, in other words, make the sun smaller. Hashem says to the Levana, make yourself smaller. And the Levana says, because I said something reasonable, I should be diminished. So Hashem says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you kaychavim at night. Well, but you'll shine, you'll rule at night. Yeah, but my ruling at night is small by comparison to the sun. Well, you'll have stars. Yeah, but that doesn't make it up. HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes through a few points where he's trying to make it up to the Levana. Finally he says, Hevi Elai Kapara, bring a carbon for me because I made the Levana small. The question is, I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't do anything wrong. I mean, forget about the philosophically, but the Levana got what it should have gotten, seemingly. So where is there a need to bring a kapara? And HaKadosh Baruch has to bring a kapara? So the Tosis Harash, it sounds like a Musar Shmuz from someone, but the Tosis Harash and Daf Tes and Shvuas says the following. Limdecha Derech Eretz. The Torah is teaching you Derech Eretz. That if a servant sins to his master to the point that the master has to punish him, the master has to be mefayes him afterwards. He has to try and make it up to him afterwards. The Levana got what it got. It sinned by doing it. Was sorach. It did something wrong. It HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to be meyaser. It had to make it suffer somehow. Afal piking, it got what it's got. You have to be mefayis. You have to go out of your way to try to do something to make it up to the person. Whether it's the, you know, whatever the example would be. I know, Rebbe, it's a good story. I never say stories, but Rebbe Twersky, I heard this from him. I think it's in one of his, it's in the book From Generation to Generation, one of his earliest books. Quick story, he was a very good player of chess when he was a child. And he used to play with the Balabatim in between Mincha and Ma'ariv by his father Shul, by the Milwaukee Rebbe in Milwaukee. And he used to beat the Balabatim always, even though he was a young, you know, 7-8 year old kid. This is the way he writes it, or he said it. One year for Rosh Hashanah, they had a balabas. They had a chush of a rav. I think he said it was from Chicago. A rav who stayed at their house for Rosh Hashanah. And after the first meal, the rav comes over to this young Avram Yishol Herschel Twersky and says, Vil Spillen Shach, want to play chess? He says, this is Rosh Hashanah, Megman. Where does it say you can? So I played him, and as I said, I'm quite good, and I beat him. All right. A little while later, the Gaba comes. The Rebbe's Gaba comes and says, the Rebbe will Edensach. So he goes to his Rebbe, he goes to his father's room. He stands by the threshold of his father's door, his father's office, and his father's there at the desk with him, with his face in a Gemara, and he's waiting with covered. And after a minute, his father lifts up his head and says with a sad look, Du hast gespielt Schach if Rosh Hashanah? You play chess on Rosh Hashanah? And I mean, that Rebbe, so Rebbe Twersky felt terrible. He said, I know what, I mean, to quote him, I experienced Arben Mises Bezdin at that point, and I'll never play chess again as long as I live on Rosh Hashanah, even though it's really not usser. But okay, and then my father put his head back down, and he looked, and I was still there waiting, and then he picked up his head with a smile. He said, Hast du ihn gemacht? Did you make him at least? Did you beat him? To me, you have to sometimes give it to someone. A parent to a child, a Rebbe to a Talmud, an employer to an employee. Even though it's necessary, the Torah is teaching us from Hevi Elai Kapara that Sorach Lefaisa. You have to try and make it up to the person afterwards. Okay, let's say something about what the Avodah of, maybe the Avodah of the 3 weeks. Or it's a funny thing. And what is Shavasa B'Tamas? There are 5 things that the Gemara says happened on Shavasa B'Tamas. 5 tragic things. But is Shavasa B'Tamas just, how are we supposed to view it? Is it just 5 terrible things happened then, and you know, and it also culminates 3 weeks later in a Tisha B'Av? Is it just, you know, 3 weeks, they breach the wall. 3 weeks later, there's a Tisha B'Av. Or is there some lesson for us in there? Is there some common theme in the five things that occurred on Tisha B'Av, on Shavuos B'Tammuz, that can teach us what we're supposed to do and what the avoda of the 3 weeks is? So I once saw, once realized, there's a common thread through these five things. I'll give you a mushel. There's a nut. You have a nut from a tree. And the nut has a shell. The shell protects the nut. Nut's impervious to attack with the shell on it. If the shell is broken, the nut is still whole. The nut is there. It's just now the thing that protects and guarantees the security of the nut that's gone. Now it's open to attack. Now it's vulnerable. Its shields are down. All five, could be that all five of the things that happened on Shavuos B'Tammuz, they were not an attack against the prime element, against the most important thing. They were an attack against something that safeguards and secures something greater than that. They're not an attack against the essence, they're an attack against the protection. Let's go through it. Well, the first one is simple. The walls of Yerushalayim was breached. We still have a Beis HaMikdash with functioning Avodah. The walls are broken. Shore up the walls. Repair them. Do whatever you take to repel the enemy at that point. We haven't gotten to a Churban. The wall is broken, but that's all it is. We haven't lost it all at that point. Another example. One of the other five things is that Apostumus HaRasha burnt a Sefer Torah. There were many Sifrei Torah Mestame in our history that were burnt at different times. The Gemara in Gittin talks about the hundreds of Bate Midrashim and Bate Knesias that were in Yerushalayim that were all destroyed. I mean, on Tisha B'Av there were many more Sifrei Torah destroyed. What's so gefarlich about this Sefer Torah? So the Meforshim all say this was not Stam a Sefer Torah. This was the Sefer Torah of Ezra HaSofer, the canonical Sefer. This is the one they used to guarantee and ensure the accuracy of every other Sefer Torah. This was the prototype. This was the one that they used to compare it to every other one. So when this Sefer Torah was destroyed, we still have Torah. We still have other Sefer Torah. But now errors can creep into Torah. The thing that guaranteed the integrity and the wholeness, the perfection of Torah is no longer there. It's subject to damage. It's now subject to getting in trouble. Let's take a third one. The Shviras Haluchas. The Luchas were destroyed on Shavuos B'Tammuz. What did that cause? It's a terrible thing. But we got second Luchas. We were given a second Luchas. What changed with the breaking of the Luchas? The first Luchas. The Gemara says that as long as the Luchas would not, if the Luchas would not have been broken, there would be no Shikchas HaTorah. Torah could not have been forgotten. It would have been imprinted on us in a way you would not have forgotten Torah. And if you can't forget Torah, you can't make mistakes in Torah. With the breaking of the Luchas, that brought somehow, metaphysically, forgetfulness in Torah came to the world. I mean, that the Gemara says is why a Talmud Chacham sheshachach Talmudai. If a Talmud Chacham forgets his Torah, no, wait, that's not the Lashon. It's a, what's a Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning, or like an old afilu. I forgot the words are stronger. Afilu Chacham sheshachach Talmud. Even at, I forgot the exact phrasing. Even the Talmud Chacham that forgets his Torah, you have to be mechabed him, because Shivrei Luchas were menachos ba'aron. We had the broken Luchas in the Aron. So the Pashup shot is that even though he's a broken Talmud Chacham, he's not what he was before, no, we're mechabed the broken Luchas by keeping them in the Aron. We have to be mechabed a broken Talmud Chacham. But the Shalosh says more based on this Yisoid. It's the reason why he's forgotten his Torah, why you can have a Talmud Chacham that forgets his Torah, is because there are Shivrei Luchas Menachas Ba'aron. With the breaking of the Luchas can come Shikchas HaTorah and all of the errors in Halacha, in our Hanhaga, that can creep in. The fourth a fourth thing that happened that day is the bittul of the carbon tamid. They stopped bringing the carbon tamid. A terrible thing. But what was the carbon tamid ensuring? It's not just, are we missing this mitzvah? Is that what it is? Medrash says in Lech Lecha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu that as long as your children are bringing carbon tamid, they will not go into galus. That was a haftacha, that as long as they're bringing karbanis, they will not go into galus. So when the carbon tamid stopped being brought, does that mean they're going into galus? Does that mean, no more tamid, go to galus? No. The tamid was the thing that ensured that galus is not a possibility of occurring. With its being stopped, with the bittul of the carbon tamid, now we have a problem. Now we're subject to attack. Again, the luchas, breaking of the luchas, now Torah could be forgotten. Apostumus burning that Sefer Torah of Ezra, we could make mistakes. Torah could be mistaken. The walls being breached, we have to do something about it. These are all attacks, not on the prime thing, not on the most important thing, but it's an attack on the shell. And the last one, on the shell, on the thing that ensures the integrity of the most important thing. And the last thing is that Menashe was hemid selem behechel. There was an idol was put up in the heichel. There was still a Beis HaMikdash. Some of Farshim say they were still bringing Karbanos at that time. But the point is, if they're putting up an idol in the Beis HaMikdash, it's a sign of the times. It's saying, oi, we're in trouble. The wall is broken. We're subject to attack. The Torah was burnt. That special Torah was burnt. We're open to mistakes and attack. There's a tzelem in here. We better do something about it. At each and every one of these five events, the thought, what should be going through people's minds is, oi, we're in trouble. Our defenses are down. What are we going to go ahead and do to protect it, to change it, to prevent it from happening? The Arizal says, Aaron HaKoyin on Shavuos HaBetam, the day of Shavuos HaBetamuz, Aaron tells Bnei Yisrael, or Yisrael, that I'll build the egel for you, and Chag LaHashem Macha, there'll be a Chag tomorrow. Now that day tomorrow was no Chag, it was one of these tragic days in Klal Yisrael's history. Whatever happened to Aaron's words, Chag LaHashem Macha, says the Arizal, Yesh Macha Miyad V'yesh Macha L'Achazman. There's sometimes the word Macha used referring to it's a long term tomorrow. It's a tomorrow that's going to come up in the future. What Aaron was saying, and what we're supposed to take away from the five things that start the 3 weeks, culminating in Tisha B'Av, is that it's not a pattern that has to repeat. Simplest one is with the wall. The wall was broken. Does that mean there's going to be a Chorban? Do something about it. Fix it. Change it. The Haftacha to Aaron was, or the Nevuah of Aaron was, that even though history so far, we've gone from Shavuos HaBetamuz, 3 weeks later we have the Chorban, and with the Mikdash not being rebuilt, it's as if it was destroyed in Nebuchadnezzar days, but there's going to come a time in history where we stop letting history, where we stop repeating it, where just like Tisha B'Av will become a Yom Tov, Karalai Mayid, Shavuos HaBetamuz, the beginning of this 3 week period, will also be a Chag LaHashem Machor, because we'll learn from our past and we'll realize these were all signposts, these were all warnings. Something's wrong, you're deficient, your defenses are down, you could start making mistakes, you better fix things up. And when you'll fix things up and when you'll change things, the taka will be a Tisha B'Av that's a Mayid, and the will taka be a Shavuos HaBetamuz that's a Chag LaHashem Machor.
Then it's going to include all the other. Turn off the phone.